And good morning to everyone. I should note that Justice Wright will not be participating on either of today's cases. The first case of the day is Comar versus State of Nebraska. Ms. Frost, good morning to you.
Your Honors, today is, in my view, kind of a chance to set the law straight on a line of judicial thinking that I think has been off the mark for a number of years. You've read the brief, so I will not take time explaining the facts of the case, except as you requested the question. Today the question before you really is, what is the meaning? What is the meaning of 81-8,213 and its interplay with 81-8,217? This is really the statute of limitations question. 8213 says that a claimant who files a state tort claim may withdraw her claim from the board if it doesn't act within 6 months. Doesn't say that she must. It says that she may. Subsection 5 of the statute says that and the statute of limitations in 82-227 are the only statutes of limitations that apply. But starting in 1991, the Coleman versus Shadron State, this court, I'm sure with good intentions, created a new statute of limitations and built something in to these statutes that is not there and, in fact, has never been there.
And what did we say? Why did we do that?
Why did you do that? Mm-hmm. Well, two of your predecessors, very good judges, both Judge Farnbrook and Judge Caporelli. Judge Farnbrook authored the Coleman case. And then using that, Judge Caporelli built onto it.
Was there a discussion of the purpose of a statute of limitations?
There was discussion of that. And with all due respect to those two judges who are very learned, certainly, and very temperate jurists, I will be blunt and tell you, I admire them both, but I think they missed the mark. It started with the Coleman case. Now, you remember in the Coleman case in 1991, that case had a mix of facts in it because they announced this 18-month rule, but there was also a question there about the minority of the plaintiff at that time. And so the case wandered about a bit, in my view, but then ended up articulating a rule that if you file your claim with the board, or the risk manager now, 18 months or more after the claim accrues, but within the two-year statute of limitations, you have 6 months from the first day on which the claim may be withdrawn to file suit. That's nowhere in the statute.
Wasn't that holding designed to be sure that those fourth quarter filers, those people filing between 18 and 24 months, still had an opportunity to get their lawsuit filed?
So the opinion articulated.
Do you think that's incorrect?
I think it overreaches, Your Honor.
How else will those fourth quarter claimants have additional time to file?
The statute additionally provides, it's got a savings clause. The statute additionally provides that if the statute of limitations expires while the board is holding the claim, it is extended 6 months from the date that the claim is either withdrawn or the board renders a decision. That's always been in the statute.
So you think it was unnecessary?
Yes, it was gratuitous. It was gratuitous, and moreover, with all due respect, what is this court's role in reading new terms into a statutory scheme?
Counsel, under your interpretation, is there any statute of limitation?
Sure. The statutes themselves, that is those two that I just mentioned to you, 81-8,227 and 81-8,213. Those provide the statutes of limitations.
Well, but counsel, under your suggested interpretation, if a claim is filed timely and the board does not act and the claimant doesn't withdraw, that claim could run for years and years and years, couldn't it?
If the board wishes it to be so. Your Honor,
wasn't that the concern that the Coleman and Hollinger courts were concerned with, particularly given that this is a waiver of sovereign immunity, that the state doesn't have to allow these suits at all, but they have chosen to do so, and don't we have to both strictly construe it? And I guess, bottom line, the legislature's had two opportunities to amend this since then, and they haven't chosen to do so. If I were writing from a clean slate, I would be with you. But we in essence put an end date in there. Back in Coleman and Hollinger, legislatures looked at it and they don't disagree. Why should we at this point go a different direction?
I think the reason is because this court has forever said, as it should, as an independent branch of government, it's for the legislature to make the law, not this court. It's for the legislature. I would venture to guess that you have already taken a look at the legislative history of the statute. If you look at the introducer's notes from February 3, 1969, it specifically said, with respect to this statute, the idea of this is that the governmental board, the claims board in this case, cannot sit on their hands and not the legislature is a body that has plenty of good minds in it.
Didn't in Coleman they use that language to justify the result?
They may have. And again, I offer no criticism of the jurists that authored Coleman and Hollinger. Not at all. But respectfully, one of the things that this court must do, it is the ultimate authority, is you don't make the law. You enforce the law. If the legislature wishes to change this law, then they may. But, as all of you have pointed out, I think, I've gotten a question from all of you, that statutory language that says a claimant may withdraw her claim within 6 months has never changed. That was part of the original statute. The statute has been amended 3 times, I think, since then. It has never changed. And so with all due respect to this body, I don't believe it's consistent with your case law to say, well, in this case, because we want to protect the state, we're going to read in a requirement that the legislature never imposed. If the legislature wishes to change it, they may.
Though they may not be interested one way or another.
That is true, Your Honor. That is quite
although true. We say they've acquiesced, it's also quite possible in real life they don't care one way or another or don't have it on their list of things to do.
Quite right, Your Honor. It may be. And in that case, I guess my point simply is this. Either the statute means what it says or it doesn't. That's the analysis that decides this case at the end of the day.
Let me divert you here and ask an irrelevant question about the actual facts of the case. Your damages are based on somebody looked at?
It's a HIPAA violation.
Okay.
Although HIPAA itself is not pled because HIPAA doesn't contain a private right of action. It's invasion of privacy and negligence are the torts that are involved.
So did anybody use that information or it's just the invasion itself?
The discovery is not completed.
Okay.
We hit a stop mark here, and that's where we stand. Okay. I'd like to reserve the remainder of the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Welch, good morning to you.
Morning, Judge. Brian Welch here on behalf of the Appalese. I want to pick up where Frost just left off. This case is Hollinger. I mean, counsel's coming in here in no uncertain terms is advocating that this court basically overrule Hollinger. And stated to this court that she would advocate that this court read the statute the way it was intended and the way it was written. Well, I guess my position on that is it has not been written, as Judge Castle mentioned. The legislature has had two opportunities, and they have reenacted this statute, 2008 and then again in 2009.
And what did they say about this section?
Not a thing. Not a thing. They didn't. In LB 821, it was concerning claims of the risk manager. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, LB 260 was adding exceptions for wrongful convictions. So on the issue of this statute of limitations, legislature hasn't addressed it. It's my position that that now is the statute. And what counsel is advocating is for this court to basically, by judicial decision, alter the legislature's reenact its enactment of the Hollinger decision.
To alter its acquiescence.
Well, the most recent cases talk about acquiescence. However, if I can find the right page, 1872, this court, on the issue of acquiescence, said, and this is in Franklin versus Kelly, 2 Nebraska, 79, the rule is well settled that when a legislature reenacts a statute upon which construction has been placed, it does so with the construction annexed. And then in 1959, in a case, Halstead versus Rosemarick, which I think we cite in our brief, quote, the legislature, when it reenacts a law, adopts a judicial construction which has been previously given it. The legislature is presumed to have known the effect which the statute originally had by its enactment, to have the intended effect to continue.
Counsel, in this case, both the district court and the court of appeals applied the six-month extension analysis from Hollinger.
Yes.
Do you think that is correct?
I do.
And why?
Excuse me?
Why?
Well, because if you take Hollinger, that was a situation where the plaintiff had voluntarily withdrawn their claim.
Hollinger, when was it filed? When was the claim filed?
The claim was filed well within the two-year statute of limitations on June 28, 2014. So it's filed then. The first time the plaintiff could have withdrawn it was December 28, 2014.
At a point after which the two-year limitations would have expired.
It had not yet expired.
Are we talking about the current case or the Hollinger?
In the Hollinger, it was 2 days before. In the Hollinger case, it was withdrawn, I believe, two days before the statute of limitations.
So let me ask this.
Okay.
Given the timing with which the claim in the current appeal was filed, this case is a third quarter case,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
And Hollinger, or Hollinger, was a fourth quarter case.
True.
Do you think that makes a difference?
I think there is an argument to be made that because it was a third quarter claim, the plaintiff would have only have had about 19 days or so in which to file within the two-year statute of limitations. As interpreted by the district court and by the Court of Appeals, the plaintiff had from December 28, 6 months in which to file a claim. And so I think the Court of Appeals got it right. But I think an argument can be made that, in fact, the plaintiff only had the 19 days. And really, why we're here is the plaintiff comes in complaining that they got caught by statute of limitations, but it's of their own making. I mean, the plaintiff did not have to withdraw the claim. That claim was with the claims board. It could have stayed there.
Is that the Sharkey case?
Well, actually, I'm thinking more of the Collins case, where Judge Conley basically made the distinction between Hollinger and the Collins case by saying the mischief here is that in Hollinger, the plaintiff voluntarily withdrew that claim. That starts the clock, if there is a clock. In Collins, Collins is very clear, and I think it's the proper reading of the statute. If the claim court rules, then you have 6 months. And that's the difference. The plaintiff in this case did not have to withdraw that claim. And to Judge Castle's point, could it just go on for indefinitely? I suppose I would hope that the claims board would exercise their task and get to it. But plaintiff had relief. They could have gone in the Lancaster County in the district court and got a writ of mandamus if it came to that. But the plaintiff in this case voluntarily withdrew that claim and then did not file it within the statutory period that I believe the statute now reads based upon the decisions of this court. And I think the plaintiff is advocating to overrule Hollinger, and quite frankly, I think it's now the law. I think it's the statute. If you don't have anything more, that's
what,
all I have to say.
How do you think this should work?
How do I think it should work? You mean
given the
writing?
Statutory language and given the Hollinger statement?
I think it should work the way Hollinger prescribes it should work, and that is that statute begins to run this was a late third quarter claim, so long as you're within.
But I'm going to say maybe perhaps without regard to what quarter you're in, if your claim is timely and it sits and you're a potential plaintiff and you do nothing, then?
Well, then I think if you do nothing, then you've got to wait for the claims board to rule. Because from when the claim could have been withdrawn, you've got 6 months. But then there's the cases that say if you're still within the 2 years, you can still file. So it depends upon when that claim, I guess, is withdrawn. If it's withdrawn, otherwise you've got to keep it there. I mean, if you want to be certain.
I guess what I'm trying to say is how does the statute get us to that statement? It all depends when you withdraw your claim.
Well, because there's a decision. I meant to say
the statute.
Does
the statute address it, I guess,
is
what I'm saying.
And I don't know the answer to that question. It's not a model of clarity, but I've been at this 33 years, and there's a lot of statutes that aren't a model of clarity.
That's one of the things that the Supreme Court struggled with in Coleman, wasn't it? That the right hand says one thing in the statute and the left hand says another.
That was the phrase that they used.
And the court then applied rules of statutory construction to make some sense of it.
That's right, as the Supreme Court was required to do, and then the legislature had the opportunity, and as Judge Castle mentioned, it was in my notes, the sovereign didn't have to give up this right. The sovereign gave up the right, created a state tort claim, and it has to be construed in favor of the sovereign. And I think it's a reasonable construction.
Or do we, deviating from the common law that the sovereign gives up its immunity?
Absolutely.
So do you strictly construe against the sovereign?
I don't think so. I mean, this was a cause of action that did not exist in common law. And I think it's got to be strictly construed in favor of the sovereign.
Counsel, if we were writing on a blank slate, isn't your opponent's interpretation of the statute more faithful to the plain language?
To the plain language?
Yes.
I don't know if I would agree with that.
And why not?
Because I think even under her analysis, plaintiff focuses on the term may. And I think given the thought that this statute is one giving up a right that the legislature, that the sovereign didn't have to, that it's to bring claims for presentment and investigation, and then for a period of time to investigate. Otherwise, the plaintiff could wait along with the board and withdraw whenever they wanted to. And I think it was the intent of the courts to try to cut that off, and that's why we have this.
I understand what the court was what this court was trying to do years before, but for that rationale that they expound of putting a cap on that process in the interest of claims against the sovereign, just using the plain meaning of the words that they actually used in the statute, you would disagree with me that your opponent's interpretation is not the more natural, plain, and ordinary meaning of the words?
Respectfully, yes.
All right.
Have we construed similar language under the Political Subdivision Tort Claims Act statute of limitations?
I know that's in our brief, but I can't remember what we said. So I'm not going to lie to you. I don't remember.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute.
1 minute, Ms. Frost.
You just did a long line reversal in Davis versus State. Stare decisis does not mean it's etched in stone. If the law was incorrect when the court articulated it, you can reverse it at this time. And indeed, I would respectfully suggest that is the proper thing to do. Judge Castle, I want to point out to you, you raised a really interesting question. So under the Collins case, it poses a Hobson's choice, doesn't it? A plaintiff could sit and wait and wait and wait and wait forever. And if the board ever acts, then that's okay. But then, I mean, this does not make sense the way this is set up. One thing I want to take note of that we've not discussed is that under Coleman and Hollinger, Coleman talks about the 18-month mark threshold. In Hollinger, it was more than 18 months. That was the confine that this court set as far as when the claim may first be withdrawn. We're in the 17th month in this case. So if you're going to go strictly on Hollinger, it still doesn't apply to this case. You're at 17, not 18.
So what rule should apply to a third quarter filer under a plain reading of the statute?
Follow the statute. I mean not to sound impudent here, but the statute says what it says. And with all due respect, under 8227 subsection 5, it says this section and 25213 are the only statutes of limitations that apply to the state. The legislature wants to change it. They have. And so the statute speaks for itself, and respectfully, all I ask of you today is to give voice to what the statute says.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is Hand-Cut Steaks.